7. For you, but I hate it when I'm talking and people are reading, so you have to stay through at least three quarters of what I say, and then Karen will give it to you. Can you hear me without this? I bet you can. No? All right. I'm very noisy. Okay, so in preparation for this, this last Saturday, I was with my 23-year-old daughter, and we were watching videos. I have two kids 15 months apart, 3 years of infertility, and then I had finally this child that I wanted. 6 months later, I was pregnant again. Could not figure it out. So anyway, I had these two kids. No, really, I thought maybe I had cancer, and when I went to the doctor, they said, maybe you're pregnant. I'm like, yeah, right. I mean, I had all these things done to me, so I don't think I'm pregnant. Anyway, so I had these two kids really close in New England, so I feel like I qualify to talk to you, and I have to tell you what I saw in these videos because it just took me right back there. And we just picked this one off the shelf. So it was, my daughter was 2 and my son was 9 months old, and it obviously it was in the winter. And this is how desperate I had gotten. We had pulled a mattress into the middle of the room. My son was crawling around, going, gee, 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 gee. And my daughter and I were playing a game, and the game was that she would jump on my stomach and I would count to whatever it was, because it was a surprise, and then, maybe it was 3 or maybe it was 23. Anyway, she'd be counting, I'd be counting with her, and then at the appointed time that she didn't know, I'd push her through my legs and she'd fall backwards onto the mattress on the floor and laugh hysterically and start it again. And, you know, she looked at me and she said, Mother, who would do such a thing? You know, I'm bouncing on your stomach so hard. And I'm just thinking, this is what it's like to be a mother of small kids in New England in the winter, which goes on forever. And just how hard and how exhausting and how trying that is, even if you love your husband and you love your kids and you love your friends. You know, it's just really hard in this climate. And I have other very funny memories. I don't even remember one of them. One of my friends told me, I used to always say, never pour more juice than you can want to mop up. There's this circular quality to your lives and what you're doing to take care of these kids adequately. And I'm really going to want to talk to you a lot about that, because I want you to think about what you want on your tombstone. Because if you always put doing these circular tasks ahead of doing some task like being nice to yourself, you're going to have a miserable life. And it's the worst thing that could ever happen to you on your tombstone is that they would say she had a dirty house. How terrible is that? That's better than being depressed. It's better than being angry. I want you to think about the stuff that a lot of what you're doing, if you did it really perfectly and you died a day and a half later, no one would ever know you did it. You know, you have to feed your kids, but then you have to set some limits, because many of the things you're spending a lot of time on, no one will ever know you did it. So I tend to think about certain tasks that you do that are really quality of life enhancing. And, you know, playing with your kids is quality of life enhancing, and I think you should give them nutritious meals. But some of the other stuff that people get very caught up in doing, like keeping on top of the laundry or keeping on top of the cleaning, I want you to really think about that, because they are soul-deadening. And if your soul is dead, you are absolutely not going to be interested in having sex. So to show your husband, do more work here. My soul is dead. Anyway, so that's my intro to tell you that I remember what it was like. And so, you know, when I was thinking about this audience, I was thinking, okay, I don't know exactly who I'm talking to, because in this room are people who love their husband, and in this room are people who currently hate their husband's guts. And some of you may have partners who aren't men, and I hope I say some things that are relevant to you too, because some of it's generalizable, but I'll probably wind up talking a lot about men and women because that's where I see the greatest conflict with sexual stuff. I don't know if you know this research. There's some research that was done following couples after the birth of the first child, and they followed lesbian couples, and the satisfaction of the people in the couples was as great or greater than before the child had been born. And when they interviewed the straight couples, terrible dissatisfaction, because men, really, a lot of men, unless you're married to atypical men, they don't really pitch in. They don't do their share, and that's a very important dynamic when we're talking about sex as well. And I want to do as I say, not as I do. Some of these battles are really worth fighting. They really are, and I can't say that I do. I will tell you how my husband trained me. Here's how my husband trained me, so don't let this happen to you. I was, you know, a feminist, and I wanted him to learn how to cook, and I showed him how to chop onions and do other things that are critical for Jewish cooking. I came home one day, wherever I was, and there was the most terrible stench in the house. And I said, "What is that?" And he said, "Why?" I said, "What are you doing?" He said, "I'm frying onions." I said, "Huh? What are you frying them?" He goes in the refrigerator and takes out a bottle of cod liver oil. Don't fall for this trick. It's worth fighting to get some of what you want in terms of getting the guy to pitch in. And the other important message I have to say, even though these don't seem related to sex, they completely are. Don't fall into the trap of thinking that he should see what needs to be done so you shouldn't have to tell him. Don't do that. You know, even if you have to tell him the same thing every day until your kids are teenagers and they reject you, tell him every day, "Today, honey, I wish you'd take the dishes out of the dishwasher, and I want you to do blah, 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 blah." And don't act like he should know, but, you know, there are structural problems that are affecting the way you feel about sex, and there should be structural solutions to them. You shouldn't have to deal with the societal issues of the way these tasks are divided. You shouldn't have to deal with the unfairness of the fact that women are all doing the second shift and we don't get any leisure. You shouldn't have to deal with them. Society should change, but society's not going to change while you guys still have young kids. So you're going to have to decide, and I hope I spur you to decide, to fight for some of the stuff you really need to make things a little more fair, or, if that's hopeless, maybe to fight to get someone to come in and do babysitting, or get someone to come in and do childcare, or to have someone come in and do cleaning, because there's research, I am not just saying this, there is research to prove that angry, horny guys are still horny, and angry, horny women are not. And I'm serious. And I'm not making this up. This is research-based. This is research-based. So, if you ever want to be interested in having sex again, unless you have a very high sex drive, and some of you do, if you ever want to be interested in having sex again, you have to fight some of these battles and fix it so that you're not angry. Okay? So here's what I was going to say. I was going to say, among you, there are people who love your husband very much, and you're in tune with them, and everything's going well. There's some of you who really are mad at your husbands, seriously mad at your husbands. And there are people in this room that always love sex, and they love sex now, and they found a way to have sex. And then there are other people in this room who never love sex, and if I have time, I will talk about that, I hope. And there are people in this room who used to like sex, and the demands of motherhood and the kinds of stresses I'm talking about are just so tough that you're not able to enjoy sex anymore. And so I'll be speaking a lot to both of the other of the groups who like sex at one point, and hopefully at the end of five time I will talk to some of the people who never learned to like it. And let's see. Okay, so the structure of mothering in this society is terrible, and I'm going to read you a little Margaret Mead quote. "Nobody's ever before asked the nuclear family to live all by itself in a box the way we do. With no relatives, no support, we put it in an impossible situation. You could say it like that about the nuclear family, or you could just say mothers. Mothers in a nuclear family. For those of you that don't have very close, beloved relatives that you trust with your kids, and you're trying to do this on your own, working in the house or not working in the house, it doesn't matter, because the demands are really intense. Then I want to tell you about another term that was, I didn't make it up, but someone named Karen Rubenstein wrote a book. You know that book called The Sacrificial Mother? So she came up with the term I like. So she says, okay, there's selfish, which means you don't think about anyone but yourself. And then there's self-sacrificing. And then she made up this other term. She called it selfist, S-E-L-F-I-S-T. And that's someone who is able to take some of the tasks that she thinks she has to do and put them on the shelf and say, I'm a human being too, I need to have priority too, I don't want my soul to be dead, I need to make choices that give me a certain amount of time every day. And I want to tell you, it isn't just mothers that do this to themselves. I really feel like there are ways in which society buys into this too. I don't know if you've had the experience, but I really, as I was going down memory lane thinking about my parenting with young children memories, I thought about this time when my kids, who were, I told you, 15 months apart, and they were going to this nursery school. And the nursery school sessions are just like 2 hours and 15 minutes or something, right? So you drive, you get, you do the thing where you get the kid ready for school, which is quite a lot of work, and then you put them in the car in their little seats and your back hurts, and then you walk them in, and then you go, you drop them off, and then you go home, and within an hour and 45 minutes, you have to turn around and go fetch them, right? So the woman at the nursery school says to me, well, love should really be in the morning nursery school, which is where I intended to put them, and mine should really be in the afternoon. And I'm like, you've got to be kidding. And she says to me, well, that's what would be best for Manya. So I looked at her and I said, Manya is not the only person in this family. And she looked at me like I had two heads, because I didn't want to have a life that was 2 hours here, go home, have one child and not the other, and then eat lunch, and then have 2 hours there. So the message is, everything, your child has control over everything. It's not okay to move things around so that either your quality of life as a family will be better or your quality of life as a human being will be better. Maybe you might want to go to the gym, and maybe you don't want to run into the gym like a gerbil, Maybe you want to drive to the gym, work out in the gym, and maybe you want to have a time to talk to your friends at the gym, or go take a steam bath at the gym. I can't think of anything more erotic, if you're a mother, right? Honestly, than being somewhere where you can go work out, get your aerobic exercise, look in the mirror, feel better about your body each day because you're paying some attention to it. That is really the key, and there's research to support this too. There's research to support that aerobic exercise is really good for women, and it actually affects their arousal. So anyway, okay. So I'm going to talk to you about some of the things that are really important for you to know, and I call them, in most of my books, I call them the four T's, and they're time, touch, trust, and holy cow, I knew this would happen. Time, trust, touch, and talk, right? But for women that are mothers of small children, it's the four T's and an S. So what's the S?
Sleep.
So, if you should be sleeping, I don't want you to do the laundry. If you have not gotten a good night's sleep, you're all going to be horrible people, right? You're going to feel terrible. There's no sleepy woman past the lust stage who wants to have sex. There's no woman, I don't care what your husband is telling you, and he's saying, I don't understand you. You weren't like this before. I'm not going to be. So, but, you know, I want you to have sleep for you, not for him. I want you not to prioritize the laundry. And if the laundry is building up like this and money is tight, I still might maybe want you to pay to take the laundry to a full place. Actually, what I want you to do is get him to take the laundry to wash in full place. And I want him to pick it up. And I want you to go to sleep. Okay? I'm not kidding. I'm completely serious. Because you'll get sick, too. And you'll just be cranky. You know, you'll just feel like a charwoman. Charwomen don't like sex either. So, all right. So, anyway. Isn't it true? It's true, right? Okay. So when you're thinking about the four T's and the S, the first T is trust, all right? And I think when I wrote Sex Smart, that book talks a lot about trust and what you learned about trust in your nuclear family, because people who have a hard time in their nuclear family, who have parents who are unreliable, or parents who are violent, or parents who are really critical, actually set you up not to trust other people, and it is a lifelong struggle that you have. But in this case, I'm talking, and if you grew up in a family like that, you'll have a harder time trusting everyone, including your husband or your friends, everyone, because you've already learned a pretty bad lesson about trust. But in this situation, we're talking about how much do you trust your husband? Is he on your team or your partner? Are they on your team? Because if they're not, if you don't feel like they're on your team, that is the motive for whether women tend to want to have sex. The way sex is portrayed in the media, it looks like everyone has endogenous drive. It springs from nowhere. That's not really the way a lot of women are. You know, men are a lot like that, but for a lot of women, once they figure out who they're going to be in a relationship with, their drive really depends a lot on what has gone on in the previous 24 hours, whether that person actually listens to you, whether they make eye contact with you, whether they treat you really nicely, okay? Because if they don't, you are not going to want to have sex with them, and I'm not going to tell you to have sex with them either. I will tell you, if you have a big issue with this, I wish you would get some help. Because here's what happens. There's a bad circle that goes, what's that thing called? Negative cycle that gets going, okay? Because as I told you, angry women are not horny, right? And horny men are bastards. So, here's the way it works. I am telling you, unless you're married to one of these guys who has no sex drive, and probably a quarter of you are, but and we could talk about that. I'll talk about that with you in private. But for the three quarters of you who are married to guys who have a sex drive, they don't understand where women are coming from. They're as horny as ever because their tasks are all linear, and they're not doing the day-to-day grind of taking care of kids. No matter how much you love them, it is very depleting to be the one that the kids often come to, and to have to keep giving and giving and giving and giving. So if you have the kind of husband who pitches in and he's really loving and respectful to you and he helps you out, you might actually want to have sex with him because you love him and you want to be close to him. You know, so those women are probably having sex, especially if you've set some time aside for it, but that's the T. If you are really mad at your husband because he's not being very helpful, or he's not being very respectful, or he's taking you for granted, and you are not interested in sex, they are deeply wounded by that. They are really hurt. They feel, no matter how nice you are to them in other ways, a guy who has a high sex drive takes his self-esteem from whether you accept him sexually, whether you're interested in being with him. So he feels rejected. If he's working outside the house and you're not working so much, or he's making more money, he feels used. And he gets really angry, and then he starts behaving in an even more upsetting way. He stops not doing nice things for you, he stops talking nicely to you, and it goes round and round, because as I said, your motive for being sexual with him depends on how he's being with you, right? And you wouldn't believe how many people come into therapy maybe 9 years later when the kids are grown. And sometimes, I don't want to scare you, but sometimes it's really too late. Sometimes the women are so angry that they've been holding a grudge for 9 years, and that can be a big problem. And sometimes what happens to men, that doesn't happen to women, because women are usually the ones who shut off. Sometimes a woman who shut herself off sexually completely, he winds up actually not seeing her as a sexual object anymore. And once men click off in that way, it's a problem. They have a hard time clicking on. The other thing I'm seeing more and more and more is guys who are going on the internet and looking at porn. And that is not something, even though you might sexually be very resentful and you might want your husband off your back, you do not want him looking at computer porn, because it will ruin him from being in a decent relationship if he gets hooked in with it. Because it's like an animal on cocaine, you know, it feeds a part of their brain, it gets them into this visual mode, because it's got different, you know, this kind of breast, that kind of breast, this kind of breast, that kind of breast, this color hair, that color hair, this shaped body, that shaped body, and they're like rats. They just eat it up, and then they get very visual, and then they get sort of inured to having a normal woman for their partner. So if you see them on the computer and you think that's helping you because you're not interested in being sexual with them, it's not helping you. You know, if you need to have a fight with them so that you're not so mad at them, or you need to go into couples therapy, do it. Okay? Because if you notice, I don't know, you guys might not have friends in my age range, but if you start noticing, you notice there's a pattern of people where they stay together as long as the kids need them, and kids hit high school or college, and these marriages fall apart. And, you know, sex, good sex is really a wonderful glue. And if you've sort of forgotten that you like it, I will be talking about that more. But good sex, sex that is your recipe for sex, is a wonderful glue, can make you feel better about him. Okay, so that's trust. And if you want, on my website, I'll hand you out these sheets. But on my website, I actually have a quiz that's in the couple section. So if you're thinking, I don't know how I feel about my partner, you could take that quiz and it will give you sort of a quick and dirty measurement of it. It's such an obvious quiz that you can look at your own answers and kind of interpret them. Okay, the next thing is touch. Okay, a lot of you are all touched out, right? How many people? Put your hand up. Who's all touched out? Not that many. Oh, this is good. Okay, touch is really important. To me, touch is kind of like the ground rock of sexuality. And again, I think women's sense of touch can change. I want to show you a little exercise. This has gotten very shaggy here, but okay. This is a little tool you could do. I call these body maps. Okay? So you draw a picture of your body front and back. I don't care if it looks like a gingerbread man. No artistic talent. Just like Kara said, you don't need any talent to do the newsletter. You don't need any talent. Look like a gingerbread person, or if you're really shy, you can just go on Google and Google human body, and they will give you a human body you can color in. Okay, so color this in according to the way you like to be touched. So the code is, you can use the code of a stoplight, because then that's really easy to remember. So green is, touch me here, I love to be touched here. In fact, you know, you can pretty much touch me here anytime. And red is, don't touch me here. I don't like it. And blue is, it depends. There are lots of it depends. It could be, it depends on where I am in my menstrual cycle. It depends on whether you've warmed me up. So anyway, a lot of people are not getting the recipes met for how they are getting touched. So if you are not getting touched the way you need to be touched, you are not going to be aroused. All right? So, again, if I had a dime for every time a woman tells me she's lying in bed with her partner and she's thinking, he's doing that thing I hate and she doesn't want to tell him, honestly, I would be so rich if I had a dime for every time a woman does that. So I don't want you to tell them cruelly, but I want you to have some discussions with that, because the right kind of touch is really how you're going to get interested in sex, because it's not going to be, you know, you're driving to nursery school with your child and you go, I just got to have it, it's just not going to be like that. You know? I'll tell you a touch story. Here's a touch story. Do you understand this? Do I need to explain it more?
No.
You understand? Okay. I'll tell you, this is a true story. Okay. This is a couple of that I was working with, and she had a, maybe she was a five-year-old kid, I forget. Anyway, wonderful couple. So the woman actually was in a field where she knew a lot about touch, and the kid was kind of hyperactive, but they loved the kid, and the husband came from a, the kid was a wonderful, beautiful kid, but you know, not a quiet kid, a kid that took a lot of energy, and then the husband came from a kind of oppressive family where it wasn't very easy for him to feel sexual. It was really kind of hard, and they had gotten completely sexually disconnected, so I was really working with them, and she was trying to explain to him how exhausted she was from taking care of their kid and what he needed to do. So, you know, I give people homework, and they come in, and I say, well, what happened? So they said, well, you know, we were supposed to do this homework, but, you know, he was very disappointed. He said, it didn't work. And I said, well, what do you mean it didn't work? And he said, I was massaging her and massaging her and massaging her and massaging her, and nothing was happening, so I stopped. So I turned to her, I said, well, what was going on? She said, yeah. She said, he gave me the most wonderful massage. He probably massaged me for 20 minutes. And I was finally just thinking, oh, gosh, I have a body. And I was, you know, I was starting to get past that relaxed state and actually get turned on. And he stopped. That's men. Have you ever heard this expression? Men are like microwaves, women are like crock pots. You can say that to your partner if he's a man, you know. One of the reasons I think women with children get to not liking sex is because they aren't getting anything like the kind of recipe they need, you know. Because men, this is two women. I should have actually, let me comment something about this. The woman who has the most green had a pretty decent life. This woman who has a lot of red like that, she's actually someone who had physical, not sexual, but physical violence in her life from her parents. And that really does change your body map. And sometimes when you're in that rust stage, all this old stuff goes away and you're not triggered. And then once you get into a more sort of normal everyday life with your partner, some of these old feelings that you have in your body come back. Because, you know, the pain is actually stored in your body. And so you could have a situation where your husband's inadvertently triggering you because he finds a part of your body erotic that actually stores some bad memories for you. That's part of why you really have to talk about what you're feeling. But anyway, so the difference between the way men and women are with touch is if I give that exercise to men, which I do all the time, a lot of the time, 85% of the time, the men's bodies a lot of times mostly look like frogs. You know, maybe they have some red on the bottom of their feet, or, you know, they don't like to be tickled under their arms. Now, think about the way I described it to you. I said, green is, you'd be happy to be touched there anytime. And women will stage it. You know, most women will say their breasts, a lot of women, their breasts will be blue, and a lot of women, the inside of their thighs will be blue, and their vaginas will be blue, and, you know, typically women will put blue on areas where, you know, they gained a little weight, they're not so happy with their stomach. So women have more places, and men, you could walk up and shake their penis, and they would be perfectly happy, right? Trying to make love to you, and no one's ever explained to them some of the differences between men and women, and they're actually just doing the golden rule, right? Do unto others what you would have them do unto you. And if you had a very lusty falling in love phase, some of the ways they used to touch you really did work for you, because during the time when you're falling in love and you're not sure if they're going to be yours, you're sitting there obsessing about them. So you're actually having foreplay before they've even come into the room. You've been thinking about them for, you know, 10 hours, and then they show up. So they could touch you in any way, shape, or form because you already warmed yourself up. But it's very different once you have little kids, you know, and they don't understand this, and their feelings are hurt by it, and they try and make women feel like they're wrong or they're defective. This is just the difference between men and women. But you have to put the energy into retraining them. And the thing people don't seem to understand about sex therapy is a lot of times people come into sex therapy and they'll come for 4 times and they're done. It's not like Woody Allen therapy. You know, you're not coming for the rest of your life. You're not mortgaging your house to go to sex therapy. But if you can't get them to listen, you should consider seeing someone so you can work it through. Because if they keep touching you in ways that don't work for you, you will not get aroused, and you will think you don't like sex. And it isn't that you don't like sex. You have not gotten to the stage where you're aroused. They don't know how to do that for you anymore. And you need to teach them, you know, even if it's a struggle. And here I have a precautionary tale for you about faking things and faking orgasm. This is a true story. I had this woman who faked orgasm for something like 30 years, and then she read a story in Cosmo or somewhere about how to give yourself an orgasm. And she could actually, at this point, she could only orgasm from lying under a faucet in a bathtub in a certain way. But she wanted to learn how to orgasm other ways, and she wanted her husband to join in her new eroticism, and she wanted me to talk to her husband with her about it because she didn't know how she was going to break it to him. So he comes in my office, and she breaks it to him very gently, and he looks her right in the face, and he says, "You're lying. I was there. You know, I know this worked for you." And he never got off that position. So you really, I don't want you to tell people in a cruel way what they're doing wrong. There are nice ways to give feedback and not so nice ways. But don't fake it, because you'll fake yourself out too, and you won't even remember what it is that all the fuss is about. So it's an investment in your own life, okay? And I think you need to know that men kind of need to learn something about a no-strings-attached kind of touch, because it would also help most women if guys would be affectionate, not only touch you when they want something, and also you have, seriously, right?
Yeah.
And you have to talk to them about what you like, because sometimes you'll be in the kitchen with boiling oil, and they'll come up and put their hands on your breast, which just makes you want. Like someone to come up and put your hands on their balls when they're cutting down a tree with a, right? So, you can have a conversation with them about no strings attached touching and what you would like from them. So figure out ahead of time what you would like, so it's something they could do. That does warm women's hearts, I think, because it's very alienating when someone only touches you when they want sex. Intercourse, I mean, too. Okay? Next one is talking. And you know this. If you aren't emotionally connected to the person, if they're not listening to you, unless they're being really wonderful in some other way, your motivation for sex might be a lot less. Okay? So, and think about what recharges the two of you. Because when I think about talk for this audience, I just think, what makes you feel close together? A lot of people are so exhausted. It seems like there are a lot of people just sitting on the couch watching TV. That is really soul-deadening. I'm sorry. That is not quality time. There is nothing about sitting on the couch, unless you really are real warm with your husband, you really are feeling very good about him. But, you know, if you're not feeling so good about him, there is nothing about that is going to spark feelings but your soulmates. You know, usually you fall in love because you have certain things in common. There are activities you like to do. There are things that brought you together. For a lot of people, there are activities. You know, so if you fell in love because you both play music, or you both love to ski, or you both love nature, and you love to take walks, and you love art, you need to make some time to do that. Because sitting on the couch watching TV is just the dregs of your time. That is not going to make you feel warm in your heart. And that's what fuels the sexual feelings for women. So sometimes you might have to pay money, or you might have to ask people to come and babysit, or you might have to swap babysitting with other people so that you can schedule time like that, and not just at the end of the day when you're tired. You might have to have more time than that to actually do something that makes you think, I really remember what I loved about that person. Okay? So, and the last T is time. And there's a lot of stuff about time, because time together and time for yourself. I say time for yourself first, because if you feel like you're just existing for other people, you're not really in your body, and you've kind of lost track of yourself. You know, you don't feel good about yourself, and you're acting like you don't matter. And I don't think people who feel like that can have good sex. I think having good sex takes a feeling of aliveness, and aliveness usually means doing something that makes you feel wonderful, that awakens you, right? Follow your bliss. So if you have actually forgotten what your bliss is, you need to figure that out in order to have even be interested in sex. And if you know what your bliss is and you're not doing it, you need to make some time to do it. And if that's going to be a fight with your partner, I'm afraid you don't have to have a nasty, vicious fight, but I'm afraid you have to stand your ground. So if you have a partner that's pushing you and saying, go, do it, please go do it. And if you have a partner who's going to give you a hard time, or he's going to be kind of like passive-aggressive about it, you still have to have this. You have to fight this one out. It's really, I can't begin to tell you how important it is. I see so many women who are mothers of young kids who are really depressed. And this is part of why people get so depressed. You know, they just can't find a way. They can't find the time. They can't find the energy. They can't find the money. And they're not given the permission to go out and do whatever it would be to make them feel really good. It could be, God, I mean, anyone want to volunteer what it would be for you? What some outside activity you could do that would make you feel really kind of excited and happy to be alive?
Yoga.
Yoga? Spa?
Golf?
What else?
Traveling?
Bicycling? So lots of stuff like that, you know? Could be taking a class. It could be going to a book group. It could be lots of stuff that's doable. The point is, a lot of times people know exactly what it is, but they don't do it. And a lot of times men can make you feel really guilty about doing it, and try not to let them. Schedule it in for yourself. It's a mental health thing. And you also can say, you heard an expert speaking about your sex life, and she said if you don't do these things, you're never going to want to have sex again. That'll help, I think. Okay? One of the handouts I have, did you take them? You took them.
No, I didn't.
You didn't? How weird. They were right there. You didn't? I thought I put them out there. Oh, here they are. Sorry. Accused unjustly. Okay. Please don't read these now. One of the things I put in there was something that I wrote in Sex Talk called Sex Night for Kids. Sex Night for Parents. And it's actually not Sex Night for Kids. Sorry. Sex Night with Kids for Parents. Anyway. It's sort of an instruction. It's a little story about how you can actually have a decent sex life when you have kids without spending a lot of money. So it's a little plan. And the plan is, you have to decide ahead of time that this is something you want to do. You certainly should give up on spontaneous sex if you're doing this. So you plan ahead of time that this is something you're going to do. You plan it with your partner. And the story is, you know all the wrong day long, but you're going to do this. And so you try and do an activity that tires the kids out. Whoever needs a nap, you take naps and you spell each other. You plan on not cooking meals, so you don't cook dinner. You plan on having a dinner that you can take the kids to McDonald's or wherever. And you get some takeout for yourself, so you're not cooking and you're not cleaning up. And get yourself some nice romantic movie to watch. And what you can do is by about 8 o'clock, you can put the kids to bed. And then they're not asleep yet, so for maybe another hour you can watch your romantic movie, by which time, if you're lucky, your children will be asleep and you won't be tired because you haven't cooked. You're not allowed to clean this day either, and you had a nap, and now you have a couple hours of actual time where you could make the environment really romantic and you could touch for a long time and you could do anything special you need to do that will turn you on, and it gives you 2 good hours to do that. That would get you to about 11 o'clock and you can go to sleep. You don't have to take a babysitter home, and you don't, you know, you're not going to have that thing that you get where you're frantic if you tried to have dinner and go out with your friends because you come home and you take the babysitter home and you want to have sex, and then you go, oh crap, it's 11 o'clock. I don't want to start this because I have to get up at 6 in the morning, right? So that's my little plan for you. Okay, so, alright, so here are a few other thoughts about this. I think there might be people in this room who actually don't know their own sexual recipe anymore. So if you're someone who doesn't know your own sexual recipe, or you know it but it's changed because of being all touched out or whatever, then as part of the thing I want you to do when you're spending some time alone on yourself, maybe you could explore learning about your own sexual recipe. Just to let you know, there is an incredible vibrator out there that never used to be out there. It's called the Erosilator, if you could remember that. Erosilator. It's very expensive. But it's a really good vibrator for people who don't like kind of penis-shaped, really hard vibrators, because this thing has a little attachment they call the French Lieutenant's mustache that actually is a little brush. I'm serious, no, but you don't use it the way you're thinking. You could, but that's not how I want people to use it. It's, you know, if you have sort of gotten to the point where you are so numbed out, you're not even sure that you like to be touched anymore with a light touch or a gentle touch, or, you know, you've forgotten whether you would actually like your face touched because it's been such a long time since anyone did that, you can experiment with that vibrator, and it actually does feel like being touched by another person, so it's very nice. The other thing I'll tell you that's a good thing to use if you need help becoming orgasmic for the first time or later on again, you might need help again. There are a couple books by Nancy Friday. Do people know those books?
Yeah.
My Secret Garden and Forbidden Flowers. There are other books too, but they're compilations of other women's sexual fantasies. So you have to read it. You have to read it and know that 95% of them either will turn you off or they won't do anything for you. But you have to read them and read it until you get one where you go, ooh. And those work for the rest of your life. And there's something in there for everyone. I have a patient who's an ex-nun. She found one. There's one in there for you. So if you need to kind of practice being sexual again, you could get the Erosilator. And if you're having trouble and you've never been orgasmic, you might want to get a book called Becoming Orgasmic. Get this, these are the names of the authors. I'm not making this up. Julia Hyman, H-E-I-M-A-N, and Joseph Lo Piccolo. I'm not making this up. So anyway, that's my recipe for if you're sort of out of touch with your sexuality. So Nancy Friday books, The Erosilator, and the Becoming Orgasmic book. Okay? So because you need to learn what your recipe is now. It might have changed. And you can't teach him what your recipe is. You have to teach him. He can't figure it out on his own, all right? So you have to get kind of good at it. And if you do it by yourself and it's on your own timetable, you might learn that it actually feels pretty good. You know, especially if you start thinking about what it would feel like to really have someone touch you in a way that made you feel you were cherished. You know, what's your recipe? How do you want to be touched? What's your body map? Are they going to touch you in the ways that you want to be touched? And are they touching you in ways that annoy you? And one of the reasons that that is really important has to do with women's arousal and orgasm and how distractible women are. So, I don't know if you know this, but did you know that men have a point of ejaculatory inevitability? That means they get excited enough, they will come. They will come even if someone walks in the room from the IRS and says, "Excuse me, Mr. Brown, we can't find your 2006. It's like, "Oh, sorry, I don't care." Now, that's men. It's probably from survival of the species. You know, they get to a certain point, they'll come. We do not have anything like that. We're in charge of our own arousal, and it is very fickle. So, you know, you could be working on getting aroused, and you could be focusing on your breathing, you could be getting into the pleasure of it, you could get into a state where you're really floating, and then you could have a thought like, "Oh my God, I didn't bake the brownies for Becky's Girl Scout dinner." That's it. You're screwed, and your arousal goes all the way. I'm not kidding. And your arousal goes way back down, and the only way that it's going to get better is if you have the energy and the drive to ask for what you want and refocus and get it up there again, all right? So that's another male-female difference. That explains why, have you noticed they're always telling you how relaxing sex is? It's because sex is relaxing for them, because they're at the top of the hill. This is if they don't have any, I'm not speaking to men who have erectile dysfunction or premature ejaculation or something that makes them anxious, but if he's functioning fine, sex is relaxing to him, because if he gets aroused enough, it's like a sled going downhill. He's going to get where he wants to go. It's not true of us, okay? So, a little exercise I made up for this too, which is to tell you that getting to orgasm for women is like taking a Great Dane for a walk, because we're so distractible. So, you know, you take a Great Dane for a walk and you want to walk at 3.5 miles an hour so you can get your aerobic exercise in, and they're like, "Ah!" And you're like, "Come over here!" And you have to do that with your arousal. You know, you have to pay attention. And if you're going to make love and you already know that something is on your mind that you need to worry about, try and become aware that that could intrude and tell yourself you're not going to think about it, you're going to put it on a shelf, or you're going to talk to your spouse about it, or you just tell yourself you're going to worry about it later, because he won't have a clue that this is what's going through your mind. But you have to be cognizant of it. And that's another reason why it doesn't work very well sometimes to have a quickie. Because if you get aroused and then you lose it and you have 2 hours, you can say, "Scratch my back," or "Rub my head," or whatever would get you back into the mood again. But if you're running out of time, you're much more likely to fake it or just bail. And I don't think if you do that a lot, you really won't want to have sex, because if you're orgasmic, you won't want to have sex because you're kind of missing a nice part of sex, okay? So, this is almost the time we're going to take questions. I just want to tell you one other thing that might be going on if you're not interested in sex at all, which is you might be really anxious. And if you're really anxious, you won't be able to get aroused at all. And sometimes people become anxious more as mothers. Sometimes you might have generalized anxiety that comes out as a result of the hormonal bath that you were in when you were pregnant, or just as a result of worrying about your kids. So there's an article in my website on anxiety and how it can affect your sex drive and your arousal, so read that. So, I guess I'm going to say a few wrap-up things and then you can ask me some questions. So I wanted to just leave you with a couple thoughts. One is, if you used to be really liking sex and you don't anymore, I want you to be curious about that. And I want you to check it out, because it could be lots of things. So if it's something I talked about, maybe you can identify it now. It also could be hormonal. So you should check that out. And if you're someone who never likes sex, I hope you'll be curious about why that is, because there are lots of things that could have happened to you in your family. It could be, that could be hormonal too, but it usually isn't. But there are a lot of things things that could have happened in your family origin that could have affected your ability to enjoy sex. You might not have learned a lot of things, excuse me, that you need to know to enjoy sex, because you really have to have learned that you can trust people and that you can touch people and the touch is good and touch is safe and that people are empathic and you have to learn to forgive and you have to not be on alert for bad things in the power and control relationship. So there are a lot of things that could have happened in your family of origin. If you want to work on that, those things can be helped. So even if you never enjoyed sex before, you can learn how to enjoy it now. So I'm going to stop and answer any questions you have. We have time for questions, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Yes?
Okay. So, gotten past the young kids, so can't use that as an excuse.
Okay.
17 years of marriage. No, I mean 21 years. That's a long time to know somebody. I mean, the lust is gone.
Right.
I mean, you know? So, yeah, that's sort of life.
Well, but how are you someone who likes touch?
Right, I mean, I understand what you're saying, you need to work it, but if you sort of set it up and maybe, I'm not saying I faked or didn't fake it, but it's kind of like, how do you now redirect how the relationship's gone for that many years? I mean, that's sort of, how do you recreate it?
Gently, but you know what, I mean, I'm starting to think that there's something that happens to a lot of women that I'm going to start doing some writing on. I think for a lot of women, I personally have a really high sex drive. I always have, and I think that it's probably inherited, actually. And that's an advantage, because if you have a high sex drive, then it's really clear to you that your sexuality is yours, that it's something you're interested in, just the way, you know, you love to read books or you love to play golf, or well, you wouldn't learn that as a kid, but, you know, you're athletic. But there are a lot of women who are sort of have a medium sex drive or a lower sex drive, and they came from families that were not very sex positive. And in that situation, I think what happens a lot of times is you see a man you want, you have a lot of power as a young, luscious, sexual person. It's really fun to turn these guys on. The chase is really fun. It's really fun to see who's going to pick you. And it gets very confusing because you experience it as actually your own sexual drive, but in a way it isn't your sexual drive. It's the drive, it's a power thing. It's the excitement of using your sexuality to attract this person, and then it's kind of the excitement of seeing their drive, because it's so powerful, it kind of takes you along for the ride. So I think that actually happens to a lot of women. So if that describes you, then first of all, to do some homework yourself, you know, don't go to your husband and tell him anything that's going to freak him out, but do what I'm describing. See if you can learn to use touch to entice yourself and learn what it feels like to really enjoy sex and to be aroused. Figure out how you really want to be touched. Get to the point where you're orgasmic and you enjoy reading some of these stories, and you'll find you get more turned on. And then it actually is your own drive. It will start to be your own drive. Plus, I have to tell you, arousal, drive and arousal are really different. And if you get good at giving yourself pleasure, it's amazing. Sometimes someone, if you're mad at your partner, you can forget it. You are not, you know, if you're neutral about sex and you're mad at him, there is no way you're going to do that for him. So you won't ever have that experience that you can have fairly often where you're actually a little too tired and you're not totally in the mood, and then you know what? So the drive wasn't yours. But if you know what the recipe is and he gets to be a good lover, you actually go, and actually, that does feel good. So after a while, you click on. But you know, if you're mad at him, he'll never have that experience. Because either you'll go through the motions, but your soul is on the ceiling, or you'll say no. So you never have the experience of, oh, actually, he was such a good lover. He actually was nice. And then that's a good circle. Because if you have those experiences, then if he wants sex, you don't go, eh. You go, maybe. And maybe he's a lot different, you know. Does that answer it?
That works.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Do you think I should put the RCL list of morning versus evening?